Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Deanne Lunan, who's an attorney with the National Consumer Law Center and the director of its Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. She assists attorneys representing low-income consumers and teaches consumer law to legal services, private consumer attorneys, and other advocates. She is the author of the center's publication, Student Loan Law and Guide to Surviving Debt, as well as numerous reports on the student loan industry and borrower issues. Welcome to Background Briefing, Deanne Lunan.
Thank you.
And the new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has stepped in to now have oversight over the collection of student federal loan payments. I take it largely because the Department of Education has been incredibly lax in oversight, and there's been a considerable amount of abuse in this arena. So why did this come about, or how did this come about?
Well, I think that's right that the CFPB stepped in into both the servicing and the collection areas, actually. In this case, it's more focused on servicing. But they stepped in because of a lack of enforcement and oversight at the Department of Education, and also because this is broader than just the federal student loans. The CFPB already has authority over private student lending, and so it makes sense that they're going to regulate servicers in both the federal and private student loan markets.
But my understanding is that the private student loan market, particularly for these for-profit colleges that are thriving around the country and popping up all over the place, don't they operate on federal money too?
Oh, absolutely. The schools operate on federal money, but they use, and the majority of the loans that the students who attend those schools get are federal government loans. But there are also loans that are completely private loans that are not backed actually by the federal government. And those private loans actually are regulated by the CFPB. Most of the worst schools actually are not, their students are not actually using those subprime predatory private loans that were handed out like candy back in a few years ago during before the credit crunch. Because frankly, that market crashed, and so their students are no longer able to get a lot of those products. But a lot of those students from the past have loans that are private loans that they're not able to repay.
But in the broader macroeconomic sense, the outstanding student debt has nearly doubled in recent years to roughly $1.2 trillion, which means it's the second largest source of household debt after home mortgages. And I'm wondering here why it is that with the cost of college degrees increasing 12-fold in the last 30 years, why it is that the U.S. Department of Education appears to be making money out of students. They've collected $42.5 billion from borrowers in fiscal year 2013 alone.
And this is something we spend a lot of time trying to call attention to here at the National Consumer Law Center, because the way that the federal student loan programs are set up, they're liberal at the front end, which is a good policy in some ways because it allows for opportunity for a lot of people to get financing at the front end. Unfortunately, it's mostly grants. But in order to keep that system going, we've allowed, frankly, the Department of Education, but Congress and others have allowed the system to be one that hammers people at the back end. They use private debt collectors. They are allowed to take people's tax refunds, even earned income tax credits, Social Security payments, and all of this without any time limit. So we've set this system up, frankly, to help keep it going so that it's more liberal at the front end, which is a real problem for people, obviously, who don't complete college or otherwise don't get the financial bump from college that, on average, a lot of people get. They're often stuck. And that's a reason, by the way, why the servicing issue is so important. It's so important that the CFPB is stepping in, because if servicers do their job properly in the federal government loan program, then most borrowers won't default. They'll be able to use one of the options available on federal student loans and hopefully not get into those horrible consequences where the government really hammers them.
Well, but apparently it's going on because defaults are at a near record level.
Absolutely, it is going on, and one of the reasons it's going on, not the only reason, but one of the reasons it's going on is because the services are not doing their jobs well.
And what are some of the kinds of abuses that we're talking about here, Deanne Lunan?
Well, I think at a very basic level, we see this a lot with the clients we work with, like them. The servicers are not counseling borrowers on the full range of options that are available to them. It's an individual decision, and you don't know for sure what's going to work for everybody. But there are a range of options like income-based repayment. There's also deferments, forbearances, even cancellations in some limited circumstances. But what we see is that the servicers often do what's easiest for them, the fastest solutions, and not necessarily what's best for borrowers. Those are often short-term solutions, may cost borrowers more in the short run, and ultimately those borrowers are more likely to default.
Again, I'm speaking with Deanne Lunan, who's an attorney with the National Consumer Law Center and the director of its Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. She assists attorneys representing low-income consumers and teaches consumer law to legal services, private consumer attorneys, and other advocates. She's the author of the center's publications Student Loan Law and Guide to Surviving Debt, as well as numerous reports on the student loan industry and borrower issues. So now that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has oversight over these entities that collect student loan debt, and it's largely because they're filling the gap because the Department of Education has been lax over the years and apparently allowed some of these abusive practices to go on. Tell me about these seven main companies. And starting with Sallie Mae, is that one of those kind of quasi-government operations like Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae?
Well, Sallie Mae used to be one of those sort of quasi-governmental, government-sponsored entities when it first started, and it was set up basically to have a secondary market for federal loans back when there were private lenders originating the loans in the federal loan program. But they've been a private company for a number of years now, and they've expanded, Sallie Mae, that is, so that they're involved in nearly every aspect of the student lending business. Everything from originating private student loans, they no longer originate federal loans because the government ended the private guaranteed loan program on the federal side. But they have collection agencies that they own. They have even a guarantee agency, which was involved in the old guaranteed loan program that they own. They're also involved in doing default management. So basically almost every aspect of the student loan business is something where Sallie Mae will be involved. They're the biggest.
But they operate under a contract with the Department of Education, which was recently renewed in spite of the fact that at least three federal agencies are investigating Sallie Mae, and there's pending enforcement actions by one of these agencies, I don't know which one it is, regarding the company's unlawful servicing practices.
Yeah, and this is a really big concern for us. So that's right, that they're one of the servicers that the Department of Education uses to service the federal government loans. And they also, by the way, some of the collection agencies that they own or also have contracts with the Department of Education to help collect on the loans. So notice the potential conflict of interest there, too. They help service the loans and prevent people from going into default. But if people do go into default, they have collection agencies that make money on the people who are in default. So it really works for them either way. But we're really concerned about the investigations, how the Department of Education is actually evaluating performance, and given all these warning signs, and not just warning signs, but investigations out there, how is it that Sallie Mae continues to enjoy such large benefits, such large contracts with the government?
Well, can you answer that question? Has the Department of Education become captured in the way that, say, the Department of Defense is being captured by defense contractors?
I mean, I can't answer the question for sure because, among other reasons, we're having a really hard time getting information from the Department of Education about the details about how they evaluate the companies, what the criteria are they use for their contracts. We've asked for that information. We have a number of outstanding FOIA requests, both for on servicing and collection issues. And frankly, we're not getting a lot of information, and they're not making a lot of that information public. So some of the information about how they evaluate servicers is available, and we want to look beneath that more and find out what's really going on. They measure complaints, for example, and Sallie Mae has generally the highest number of complaints, but we think even those complaints are an underestimate because the Department of Education's Inspector General said that a number of the companies, including some of those entities that are owned by Sallie Mae, aren't even reporting complaints that come to them.
So in terms of the borrowers, though, what's going on in the sense that it doesn't sound like they have very many options and that Sallie Mae gets them coming and going, and apparently there aren't too many refinancing plans available and loan modifications and other repayment plans. So given the extraordinary nature of this $1.2 trillion in outstanding debt, which is the second largest source of household debt after home mortgages in the country, you would think that somebody in the Congress would be concerned. I mean, economists are concerned because it's apparently a drag on the U.S. economy and on its recovery. But what about our politicians? I mean, are the students simply not being an effective lobbying group, as obviously as effective as the student loan lenders are?
Well, right. I mean, I think that Congress, there are some people in Congress who are very concerned. Senator Elizabeth Warren, for example, wrote a letter recently to the Department of Education asking specifically for more information about what's going on with Sallie Mae. So there certainly are some in Congress who are paying attention, but not enough, and not enough to actually get something done. Something, for example, as straightforward as restoring bankruptcy rights for borrowers or that sort of thing. Companies like Sallie Mae spend a tremendous amount of money on lobbying in Congress. Clearly, the student advocates and the students themselves don't have nearly those resources to spend in terms of lobbying. But still, we hope that the legislators will hear the student concerns. There are some groups that are putting those forward. In the meantime, it's important for borrowers to know that they do have options, particularly on the federal loan side. Even if their servicers are not giving them accurate information or trying to get them into the easiest solution, they should keep pushing, because Congress actually has done some good things in the past few years, and the Obama administration has as well, in giving more flexible options to the federal loan borrowers. You just might not know about them, or you might not be able to get information about them, but you should keep pushing. The private loan side is much worse in terms of options, and in that side, for the most part, it's up to the lender and their own discretion if they want to offer something to a borrower or not, and most of them don't.
But, of course, 85% of the market is not private. It's the government, right?
Right. And in those cases, even if you're already in default and you're a borrower, there's a lot fewer options, but there are still some options for people. And I think it's important for people to know that it's not necessarily complete despair, even when you're facing these extraordinary draconian collection tactics that the government has, the powers that the government has to come after you. It's not true for everyone, but there is often something that you as a borrower can do if you have a federal student loan to get out of default, or if you're not in default, to get into an affordable repayment plan. The problem, and that's where we get back to the CFPB here and why it's so important that they're going to be paying more attention to the servicing side of it, the problem is that you may not get that information about how you can most help yourself from your servicer.
So, Deanne Lunin, you just mentioned restoring bankruptcy rights to student borrowers. When were these rights taken away?
Well, there's a slightly different tracks for the federal student loans and the private student loans. It's been actually sort of a steady erosion on the federal loan side for a long time. There were a number of ways that borrowers could still get bankruptcy relief more easily on the federal loan side, but those have been limited for a while, and now you still can get bankruptcy relief, but it's very, very, very difficult. You have to go through a separate trial, essentially, where you have to prove undue hardship. But for private student loans, that limitation was only added in 2005 when Congress basically overhauled the bankruptcy system. So that's actually relatively new on the private loan side.
And that was when the Congress, the Republican Congress, at the behest of the banking lobby, made some pretty draconian provisions, did they not? For example, they prioritized paying back loans over child support, my understanding was. I remember at the time. So clarify
right.
that if
called,
you will.
It was called bankruptcy reform, but it was really, frankly, mostly something that the industry pushed very hard for and was very anti-consumer in terms of the reforms to the bankruptcy system. And as part of that, there was adding the private student loans in the same category as very difficult to discharge in bankruptcy as federal student loans.
So in terms of what we're hearing from economists, that this is a drag on it's sapping the economy and it's slowing down U.S. economic growth and recovery. That would seem to me to be, given that President Obama's political future in many ways is dependent upon getting the economy up and running, and that's certainly true of the Democrats in 2014, and it's clear the Republicans have not helped them in any way to improve the economy. They've frustrated them at every turn. But given that Obama is apparently very close friends with this Arne Duncan, the Secretary of Education, you would think that there'd be some pressure from the White House to basically stop this drag on the economy and this draconian treatment of students who can't even get into the job market to pay back their loans because the job market is so poor. At the same time, they're saddled for this onerous debt, which means that they're not consuming, they're not buying homes, they're not buying cars, they're not buying refrigerators, they're not doing all of the things that this consumer-driven economy needs.
Right, and you know, to be fair, the Obama administration has made this a priority in some senses. I mean, they've done some executive actions to expand some of the affordable repayment plans, and they really haven't had any help in terms of actual legislation being passed in Congress. So the administration certainly has made it a priority in some ways, but as I mentioned, the back end side of things, the hammering of consumers and student borrowers who maybe don't succeed in education the first time around, who don't complete, or if they do complete are facing these difficult economic circumstances, the administration hasn't done anything additional to sort of give some relief from those collection tactics, those collection powers. And in fact, that's how they really fuel, in many ways, the student loan system. They also haven't found a way to deal with the runaway college cost problem and to really hold the schools and colleges more accountable for the outcomes for their students. They've tried in some ways, they've tried particularly focusing on the for-profit school industry, but it's a very powerful industry. The higher education industry, in fact, is very powerful all the way around. And so knowing that it's unlikely that there's going to be a lot of reform from within, we need some real courage to go forward and address some of the real root causes of this problem, including how expensive it is now to get a college education.
But just in terms of the CFPB, this new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, they've issued a report saying that profit-maximizing practices that are banned in other consumer debt industries are still being used by these student loan borrower collection companies, which is what we're talking about here today, that the Department of Education has had lax oversight over, and now the CFPB is stepping in. That just strikes me as somewhat obscene. I mean, why beat up on students more than you do on people that go mad at Walmart and at Kmart and, you know, can't pay back for their plasma TV?
Right. It's a very short-sighted policy all the way around. We rely on debt loans basically now for students to finance their education because those educations are so expensive. And then we have these policies, as I said, where we really hammer them at the back end. And it's not just that we hammer them in terms of the policies we're taking federal benefits and taking tax refunds, but we use private contractors, collectors, that is, who profit off of all of this and who see this as the opportunity of a lifetime as student debt is exploding. And we need to take a look at that policy and realize that it's short-sighted, because if we would allow and help many of those students get a fresh start, not have it be so that you go to school once, it didn't work out financially, and now you're basically in trouble for the rest of your life, give them ways to have a fresh start, then if you look at that in the long term, they're more likely to potentially go back to school or potentially get a more productive job and eventually be able to pay off the debt and also be, you know, working in more productive jobs. It's a long-term way of looking at the problem, but nobody's really wanted to look at it that way.
Well, Deanne Lunan, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Again, I've been speaking with Deanne Lunan, who's an attorney with the National Consumer Law Center and the director of its Student Loan Borrower Assistance Project. She assists attorneys representing low-income consumers and teaches consumer law to legal services, private consumer attorneys, and other advocates. She's the author of the center's publication, Student Loan Law and Guide to Surviving Debt, as well as numerous reports on the student loan industry and borrower issues. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.